Several retired members of the U.S. military have signed an appeal to preserve affirmative action. The Supreme Court is hearing the case of three white students who are challenging the admission process at the University of Michigan Law School. The retired officers argue that a ruling against racial preferences could harm the military. A so-called friend of the court brief was signed by retired General Norman Schwarzkopf, retired General Anthony Zinni, and also retired Lieutenant General Julius Becton, who joins us now. General Becton, welcome.
Thank you very much, Steve.
How does this case bear on what the military does?
Well, it's clear that national security is a very, very important matter, and we have determined that in order to have an adequate national security force, we have to have a highly qualified, racially diverse officer corps, because if we don't, we can go back to the days of the 60s and 70s when we had major problems.
What went wrong when the officer corps in particular was more segregated than it is today?
In the 60s and 70s, we had, in some cases, less than 2% of the officer corps were black. If you have a force that has, say, 25 or 30% black enlisted, and 1% or less than that an officer, you get the projection or perception that all kinds of bad things are happening, fact or fiction. As a commander of a brigade in the 70s, and later as the commander of a division in the 70s, I know the kinds of things that were happening in my command, and some of them were based on a function that we were not sensitive to all the ills of segregation and the problems that we were faced with when we did not have the perception of equal opportunity.
Now, I know that the military was one of the first institutions, maybe the first major institution in American life to desegregate in 1948, and that it's remained diverse. But how does the military do that exactly? How do you get that diverse officer corps?
The Army makes a point to go out and find, recruit the people that they want. If they need to have enhancement of their academic skills or whatever, they are brought in, raised to the level that they can do the work, and then permitted to be very competitive with everyone else.
So how does the Michigan case, the Michigan system at the University of Michigan Law School, compare to what the military does?
I cannot talk to the University of Michigan Law School. I can merely say that the Army is faced with the situation that we do use a certain amount of limited race consciousness in our recruiting and our admission policy. That's what we are about.
And what makes you think that the Supreme Court, in its ruling on this law school, might also overturn the Army's ability to do what it does?
I think it's more than just the Army ability to do what it's doing. That will impact on the recruiting and the admission policy of the service academies, of those institutions that have ROTCs, and those are the two basic programs by which we bring officers into the military.
General, this is an interesting thing to pursue for me, because I think about large numbers of Americans who probably absolutely support what you've done in your career and would think of themselves as very strong supporters of the military, but would be inclined to see affirmative action as political meddling, as distracting the military from its far more essential goals, in their view.
Those who are prone to take that view, they ought to talk to someone who's been a leader in battle. You have the list of people who are signed up with me, I think, in front of you.
Yeah.
Every senior officer is on there has been in battle, has been battle tested. And every senior member, I'll be willing to wager, would recognize this is a combat multiplier. It brings about unit cohesiveness. It takes away the we, they problems that we had 30 and 40 years ago. And it makes the force to be one.
Julius Becton is a retired lieutenant general of the U.S. Army. General Becton, thanks very much.
Well, thank you, Steve. I appreciate it.
NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg will be watching this story closely, as she does all Supreme Court cases. Welcome back, Nina.
My pleasure, Steve.
We just heard from a former military leader about why he wants to keep affirmative action in place. I gather that there are corporations as well that have filed friend of the court briefs on this.
Oh, three or four dozen of the Fortune 500 companies have filed briefs in the Supreme Court saying that race should be able to be a factor. And the reason they say is multiple. There's the reason they give, which is, look, our consumers are minorities. In order to have executives and people who deal with those consumers and frame products for those consumers, we need minorities at the top of our workforce and in the middle of our workforce, and they should be able to go through the educational system. It's important for us. They also avoid lawsuits that way because they have voluntary affirmative action programs. They avoid boycotts when they do bad things, like Texaco at one point was sued, and there was a boycott against it by Jesse Jackson.
This takes place in an interesting time for affirmative action. What's the legal landscape in which this decision will land here?
Well, it's interesting because in the last decade or so, the Supreme Court has been pretty hostile to affirmative action in contracting, government contracting, for example, set-asides in the area of legislative redistricting. Decades ago, it said you could have voluntary affirmative action in the workplace, but the court has not ruled on that lately in the last 10 or 15 years, and the distinct impression one might have is that this is a different court than ruled on that way back then, and that its views would be quite different today.
If there's a ruling against the University of Michigan, could that really affect the hiring practices of companies as well as affecting affirmative action at colleges?
Yeah, I think it you'd have to say that it's likely to be what they say in the legal profession is controlling. After all, education is only for a few years. A job is for possibly a lifetime. And the argument on the education side is that this is a gateway to the professions, to a life in the workplace, whereas the workplace is forever after. So it could also affect mentoring programs, scholarship programs. It could have a huge number of implications. Even, for example, a police department in a majority-minority city with a majority of blacks and Hispanics, let's say, might want to use race as a factor in hiring. So it could have patrolmen, could have undercover agents. That could be affected conceivably.
We've got this avalanche of friend of the court briefs that have been filed here. How seriously does the court take these?
Well, no one is ever certain. Some justices, it might just tick off. Others might actually think quite seriously about the fact that you've got so much of American society saying, don't get rid of this thing that we've been doing for the last 25 years.
NPR's Nina Totenberg. Nina, thanks.
Thank you, Steve.